Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to AI Named This Show. I'm Tasia Custodi.
And I'm Tristan Jutra.
And we're your human hosts. On today's episode, we have a little bit of follow-up on President Biden's executive order on AI. We've got what's slowly becoming one of my favorite things, a Microsoft whoopsie-doopsie, and a whole lot on the UK AI Safety Summit, which is totally going to save us all from the AI apocalypse, right? Right? Well, hello to our listeners in Denmark. And Tristan, do you know how you say hi in Danish?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, hi.
So perfect.
Love it.
We now nailed that one for sure.
That's the kind of language I can get behind.
We really, really nailed it. Well, Tristan, why don't you kick us off with a little bit of follow-up?
Well, last week we talked about AI regulation in the context of the U.S. executive order on AI, and it was a good time. Good time was had by all, as I'm sure you can agree. And one of the points that came up during that conversation, in the executive order itself, was the idea of standardized digital watermarking rules. So in previous episodes, we've talked about watermarking, either with a little logos like the Adobe's CR logo, or there are some imperceptible watermarks, such as those developed by Google. And then there's some kind of watermarking you can do in text itself, just the word patterns and the like. And the with the image ones, for example, imperceptible watermarks into the pixels and the metadata of images, or using a transparency to show the provenance of the content. So in the executive order, it includes this as a necessary and effective way to prevent AI disinformation and protect content creators' rights. So that's totally going to, stop our deepfake problem and, mm-hmm. Right? Right?
Yeah, it's just going to solve it just like that. It's been this easy the whole time.
Well, as it turns out, even watermarking AI-generated content isn't foolproof, and current methods can be broken or faked by malicious actors. Or you even think about those who may be in different jurisdictions who don't have to follow the same rules. And, all our issues that we have aren't necessarily domestic, right? So, if there's open source image generation platforms that anyone can adapt and modify for themselves, they could dispense with any digital watermarking in there. So like Stable Diffusion, one of the most popular platforms, is open source. So, they could add it in there, but if someone forks the code and does, makes their own project out of it, no watermarking there. There's also some privacy and security concerns too. For example, if you're a satirist, generating images under an authoritarian regime that's not fond of criticism, well, digital watermarking that shows the provenance of the image, well, that could tie it back to you, and maybe you don't want that if you're anonymous or pseudonymous. So again, all of these things that we're trying to do in the interests of safety and regulation, and safety is going to be our theme today, AI safety. Sometimes they're for, saying for show may be a little cynical. There's a lot of posturing right now when it comes to AI safety and AI regulation, but a lot of these ideas for prevention and safety can easily be thwarted or undermined. So the argument. Then the conversation is, what's the point of spending that much energy on things like this too, right? You gotta think it through.
It's a lot about what we've been saying of another wait and see. I guess we'll wait and see how and if this actually works, which we just love. Well, Tristan, I have another little wee bit of follow-up for you, and maybe kind of some exciting news for certain organizations, because the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, is inviting organizations with expertise and capabilities in artificial intelligence safety to join its new consortium that aims to foster innovation and AI trustworthiness. The consortium is part of the US AI Safety Institute, which is led by NIST, and it aligns pretty well with the recent executive order that we've been talking about. So the consortium members will enter into cooperative R&D agreements in areas such as metrology, human AI teaming, and interaction and economic analysis. They will also contribute in project infrastructure support and events. So here's the rub for those interested. NIST will host a consortium workshop on November 17th. Mark your calendars, because it's 2 weeks before its deadline for accepting letters of interest on December 2nd. So if you are an organization with expertise in AI, this could be a pretty cool opportunity for you.
Get in there, because that's the new hotness, AI research and regulation.
AI is so hot right now.
Stop trying to make AI safety happen. Okay, so and another quick little bit of follow-up. Last week, we were talking about the back and forth accusations of doomsaying and by various key AI thought leaders and godfathers, all the godfathers of AI. So we had people like Jan LeCun, one of the quote-unquote godfathers of AI, and Andrew Ng, who were accusing the big tech companies and some of their leaders, like Sam Altman and Elon Musk, of being chicken littles and sort of asking for this regulation so that they could benefit from regulatory capture. Well, Geoffrey Hinton chimed in on the social network formerly known as Twitter, X, and with an interesting little insight, saying, they may have missed the main reason why the big companies want regulations. He says, years ago, the founder of a self-driving company told me that he liked safety regulations because if you satisfy them, then it reduced your legal liability for accidents. So maybe this is just a whole exercise in, checking the boxes. Okay, we're going to ask the government to make a bunch of rules, and then we're going to follow those rules. And then when oopsie doopsies happen, we're fine. We did everything you told us to. So as opposed to like charging ahead, we've seen updates with self-driving recently in San Francisco, and I think Cruise has been blocked from doing any more stuff recently because of an unfortunate incident with a pedestrian. And maybe there wasn't regulatory clarity there or enough to satisfy the authorities. Maybe that's the case here. And if they had done everything, if there was a strong regulatory framework and they had satisfied things, then maybe, pedestrian or two now, once in a while. It's just a cost of doing business, right? But it's one of these cases where there's still a lot of uncertainty. So
I like how you very casually just said, hit a pedestrian or two every once in a while, the cost of doing business. You just really subtly snuck that in there.
Well, I mean, again, you think about the number of pedestrian-involved automobile accidents, like with human drivers, which totally, that whole conversation is just so broken.
That's another episode.
Because okay, it's a new thing, so then we've got to it's a large-scale trolley problem, let's put it that way. So anyway, Geoffrey Hinton, one of the godfathers of AI, chiming in saying, it's not about regulatory capture, it's about regulatory compliance and dismissing with the liability.
Geoffrey. Well, before we move into our exciting kind of main meat, Tristan.
Speaking of whoopsie doopsies.
I know. I really we need to come up with a segment for your AI whoopsie doopsie, because this is fast becoming.
Send us your sound effects, folks.
Please do. Somebody come up with something for us. Send it to feedback@ainamedthisshow.com and we'll use it, man. This is becoming maybe concerning that this is becoming such a regular segment. We didn't think this would be on AI Named This Show, but here we are. And this whoopsie dipsy is once again brought to you by Microsoft. My favorite leading whoopsie dipsie category.
They're becoming the experts.
They really are. So a poll labeled Insights from AI appeared next to a Guardian story about a woman's death. And this poll, Tristan, asked readers to vote on how she died. I mean...
What do you think? Well, let's see.
My God. I need a moment of silence. This poor woman. So the poll was very quickly removed because it caused, quote, significant reputational damage to The Guardian and its journalists. Microsoft replaced its news division, as we know, with AI and algorithmic automation.
What's the worst that could happen?
Right? This happened in 2020, but the content generated by its systems has contained what we could say grave errors that human involvement could have prevented. So I think you remember, geez, was it our first AI whoopsie-doopsie from Microsoft again, surprise, surprise, where they, it was a travel guide where they recommended the Ottawa Food Bank as a tourist destination. Remember that, Tristan? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, good grief. So The Guardian's chief executive wrote a letter to Microsoft, like to their president, saying, hey, can we have some assurances here that Microsoft will seek that the outlet's approval before it's going to place anything using experimental AI technology on or alongside its journalism. And they also want to make sure that Microsoft will always make it clear when AI has been used, because we talked about that before. We know it can be a slippery slope, but like that poll wasn't marked and it just asked people to vote on how she died. Good Lord, Tristan.
So to be fair, this is a sort of tool or widget that, you know, people could plug into their, you know, their news website or blog, but it just happened to be powered by AI. And I guess it's a new tool that Microsoft is, quote unquote, experimenting with. And The Guardian, like, you know, is accessing Microsoft's news platform to help, you know, make their websites more engaging and interactive. Online journalism has had a rough time the last few years. We've talked about its challenges even with the news on social platforms and in search in places like Australia and Canada in the past. And with Google's search generative experience, you know, scooping, you know, key information and presenting it in the search engine results pages. So, you know, You can't blame these online publications like The Guardian, which is a storied newspaper from the UK, for wanting to do everything they can to keep people on their sites and get those eyeballs on those ads. But when you have AI doing these things and not the human oversight, there should be at least some sort of like a little approval. Hey, do you want a poll on this? Yes or no?
But when a little looky-loo.
When you're cranking out like dozens, if not hundreds of articles a day, that's a lot of extra work, right? Well, maybe get an intern on that or something, because it's not a great look.
And this has been your AI whoopsie-doopsie.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
All right, should we get into the big guns, Tristan, or what?
Speaking of UK,
ooh,
AI Safety Summit hosted by Prime Minister Rishi Sunak in the UK, trying to position the UK as AI thought leaders. And of course, there's, you know, leading up to it, a lot of doom and gloom, perhaps. You know, What are we going to do to save the world? So basically, this was a global event hosted by the UK at Bletchley Park to discuss the risks and opportunities of frontier AI, which is, you know, we're talking about the new AI models, sometimes even before they come out, we're talking about the research side of things. So Frontier AI is a highly capable general purpose AIs that can perform a wide variety of tasks and match or exceed the capabilities of today's most advanced models that are out in the public. So two main categories of risks that could emerge from Frontier AI that they've identified are the misuse risks, where bad actors use AI for harmful purposes, like, and loss of control risks, where AI systems behave in ways that are not aligned with our values and intentions. And so some possible ways to increase AI safety that a lot of folks are talking about nowadays include creating ethical standards, ensuring transparency and accountability, fostering public awareness and education. I think that's a key one there. Mm-hmm. And collaborating on AI safety research and standards. So this is the start of a global process to identify, evaluate, and mitigate risks from Frontier AI. The UK government will engage with various stakeholders, including countries, academics, civil society, and businesses, as well as the public, to, you know, hear their views and insights on this critical topic. So some lofty goals there, for sure. And this all happened last week, just as we were recording. We were recording last week's episode. So this is our little roundup today. And, you know, there's lots of great intentions. The cynical people are saying, well, this is Rishi Sunak, who's not doing great in the polls, trying to, you know, take the lead on a hot topic right now, right? And it was upstaged a little bit by the U.S.'s executive order earlier the same week. So there's a little bit of jockeying for thought leadership in this whole space, of course. But, you know, that's... I guess maybe that's a good thing, because it means that various governments are now taking this seriously. And of course, they're calling the tech companies, big tech, to come and say their part as well before it comes to getting them in front of Congress or House of Parliament or House of Lords and whatnot. Once they've had whoopsie dipsies. So let's try to avoid the whoopsie dipsies on a global, you know, apocalyptic sort of scale, I suppose.
I mean, so, you really can't please everybody, can you? It's like every major country in the world is trying to figure out AI safety, but it's like, you know, I'm sure posturing. But it was a pretty crazy list of attendees, wasn't it? People that took part in this.
Yeah, so we had, of course, the delegates from various countries. So the U.S. sent Vice President Kamala Harris. We had the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. Of course, Elon Musk, the head of Tesla and XAI and other companies. And OpenAI's Sam Altman. And, you know, this is, the whole event was sort of demonstrating the high level of global interest in AI safety. So this is the big show, at least for now.
Well, there was a couple notables that, of course, people were like, look who's missing. And that was also two people, Emmanuel Macron and Mr. Joe Biden, who we've been talking about a little bit with his executive order. So, you know, they're saying, well, those two people weren't there, and that's very notable. And so therefore, that can impact the effectiveness of and the global acceptance of whatever outcomes come from this summit. I mean, I don't know.
He sent Kamala, right?
It's a bit loose. He sent Kamala. I mean, geez, we sent the vice president, people. Like, maybe Mr. President couldn't go, okay? There's a lot going on.
And political pundits will, of course, say things like, and they might not be wrong, that it's tough for vice presidents to stand out because the presidents get all the attention. And, you know, having some key portfolios for a vice president to aid with visibility, especially if they have presidential aspirations in the future. And there's been some questions about her viability as a candidate vis-a-vis, you know, who the opposition might be. Mm-hmm. And let's get Harris out there and represent, so to speak. But Macron from France not being there, well, they're right in the heart of the EU. Mm-hmm. Come on.
That to me was more notable.
So the one of the key outputs from this series of discussions and, you know, throughout this this couple of days, it was 2-day summit, so how much can you actually get done? But they came up with something called the Bletchley Declaration. And I'm sure it was... You know, I'm sure they had it drafted ahead of time, but mm-hmm. they just had people sign on at the event there. And the Bletchley Declaration was signed by 28 countries, including major players like the U.S., China, and the EU, acknowledging the risks posed by AI and committing to international cooperation to identify and mitigate these risks. This declaration aims to foster global collaboration on AI safety and sets a two-pronged agenda focused on identifying shared concerns regarding AI risks and building cross-country policies for risk mitigation. So again, these are just some early steps.
Well, I don't want to be a naysayer here because obviously something like this, like a declaration, it is significant and it's a good step in the right direction. But like, there's still a lot of disagreements over the specifics of AI regulation and who should be leading the efforts and even how we regulate. Like, there's still all these different disagreements. So that really showcases the challenges in reaching a global agreement on AI governance. Like, especially we're talking about China's included in this, and we know how they want to be using AI. So to me, it's kind of like, I mean, cool that they signed this, but...
there's a lot TBD in this department.
Yeah, for sure.
And both the US and the UK have taken the initiative to announce plans to launch their own AI safety institutes. And we just mentioned earlier on about what NIST is doing, and of course, the Department of Energy, and not to mention all the other nonprofits that already exist, but this is the ones with government blessings. And those safety institutes are aimed at regulating the development and use of AI technologies, signaling a commitment to future regulatory efforts. So yeah, we just got to get some more public agencies there. Everything will be tickety-boo.
Perhaps, or it could lead to more of like a fragmented and kind of inconsistent regulations, if you think about it, because if every country kind of take different stances and they have different AI safety institutes here and one there, and, you know, is this going to hinder global cooperation? And we talked last week, we say the more groups involved, the more things can be slowed down. So hopefully, if we get a peek behind the curtain about really what's in this agreement, if you will, maybe it would answer some of our burning questions. But I hate to keep saying it, Tristan, we're going to have to wait and see.
Well, the tech firms that were represented there included Meta and Google DeepMind, which actually was founded in the UK, mm-hmm. and then got bought by Google and kind of combined with their eventually combined with their other AI efforts. OpenAI, they've all expressed their commitment by agreeing to allow regulators to test their latest AI products before public release, indicating a sector-wide acknowledgement of AI risks.
Which I love very much, but this is like a volunteer thing, right? Mm, it's a volunteer agreement. You don't have to, none of these companies are legally obligated to comply in any type, sense of the word there. So it's kind of like balancing transparency with proprietary interests could get a little bit challenging. I don't know that we necessarily, do we want to say things, we need legal compliance in certain things? I mean, I know that's part of what we talked about with the executive order in the States at least, but yeah, it's going to be kind of interesting to see if this actually means anything. We know a lot of big companies say things a lot of the time, and they say, like, okay, here's a little aside. Whenever we watch our little Google events or our Apple events and they talk about what percentage of their phones and their devices are made with green technology and they're going to go 100% green, and when we hear the word green this and green, and we think, oh great, this is so good, and everybody overlooks all the actual offputs they're putting into the environment, right? So is it actually them signing it? Is it actually going to hold them accountable, keep their feet to the fire? Or is it just something for them to pat themselves on the back and say, look, we're open to AI safety and regulation? Am I being too negative for you this episode? I'm usually the positive one.
Well, I think one of the frustrations that could emerge quite easily is the slowdown that may be represented by having to jump through additional hoops before. Like, one of the things about software generally in this, a lot of this AI stuff is in the software realm, well, even in the hardware. Like, since when have you had to have regulators like approve your GPUs, that you're manufacturing, like NVIDIA and the like, or you want the government to, you know, take a look at Microsoft Word before it gets released. Well, now if you're integrating AI technologies into Microsoft Word, does that have to pass muster with your government agency of choice, let alone some, you know, other high profile things? Like, I could see tech companies who are, you know, known for moving fast and breaking things. One of Facebook's original internal mantras there. They're going to want to sit around for 3 months while you have, you know, government bureaucrats review all this stuff to, you know, make sure it meets their guidelines? Or do you want to, like, push ahead and get that edge on your competitors? You know, not to mention, like, the geopolitical rivalries going on as well, where speed is everything, keeping an edge up, getting an edge on your competitors. So anyway, there's some other little issues. Some of the potential risks that they were talking about included the risks associated with open source AI, again, touched on a few minutes ago. That was a topic of discussion, with concerns over malicious misuse by bad actors and the creation of super intelligence beyond human control. So people like Elon Musk and yet another AI godfather, Yoshua Bengio, who's from Canada, represent. And of course, Geoffrey Hinton, another AI godfather, was there, whose take on this stuff has been a little more nuanced. When he first left Google, we talked about this several months ago on our other show, Momentous Live, that he was leaving Google's DeepMind project because he wanted to be able to more honestly and transparently comment on some of the developments. Some people thought that he was an AI doomer, and he's come out and saying, like, no, I'm not a doomer per se. I just want to take a common sense approach to these things. And he is distancing himself from some of the other folks who are a little more pessimistic. But the idea, I think the attention being paid to open source is so important because, as mentioned, if you've got open source AI projects that are developing really powerful models, well, that means anyone can access them and fork them into their own projects and use that power, maybe not for such great purposes.
Yeah, it's really about finding a balance, right? Because open source is great for transparency and, like, the speed of innovation, but then you also have to kind of balance that with safety, which is what the whole name of the game is here.
That's the challenge.
I'm so glad it's smarter people than us that are having to deal with that.
So what do? Do you tell open source projects it can't be open source anymore? Like,
no.
OpenAI, I don't know if they are open source exactly, but they were a nonprofit, and now some people are calling them closed AI because they're not nearly as open as they used to be, especially since they got that sweet, sweet Microsoft money.
You're never gonna, anytime you do anything in the world, you're never gonna impress everybody. I'm gonna go off on a side tangent.
True. I mean, this podcast being a case in point.
Right? Like, somebody's always gonna be upset, and it's like, just take the innovation for what it is. You guys, seriously.
One of the other things that kind of came to light during the summit was existing disagreements on regulatory approaches. The UK is proposing a light touch approach to AI regulation that kind of fits with Rishi Sunak's a bit more conservative or quasi-libertarian thoughts on certain things, which contrasts with the EU's stricter AI Act. And one thing we know about the EU is they love to EU. They love them some regulation, as evidenced by GDPR and other things. You know, great intentions, privacy, data handling, and the like, but big tech has really been hitting a lot of roadblocks with the EU lately. There's lawsuits being threatened against various big tech companies for not complying with this, that, and the other thing, really making it difficult for things like targeted advertising. And, like, so yeah, let's, I mean, say what you want about privacy and, you know, getting these creepy, very targeted ads, but the other side of that is you see ads that are totally irrelevant to you, and is that more annoying? The EU has taken a very clear stance on a lot of these issues. Again, including AI, UK is trying to be a little less heavy-handed there. But so there's some diversity in the regulatory frameworks showcase the challenges in achieving unified global standards. Because again, everyone's got their own take on these things. And then one of the other things that raised a few eyebrows was China's participation in this whole process. Of course, because you think about things like their domestic application of AI, really good. I think facial recognition, how that all ties into your social credit score and the mass surveillance state they have. Again, kind of surprising that UK is taking a light touch, given the kind of quasi surveillance state that they've developed over the last one or two decades with, you know, CCTV everywhere. And I guess you start applying AI sauce onto that, it could get even more powerful and dystopian. So maybe Sunak's trying to pump the brakes a little on that stuff. So China has some academics and officials who are also concerned about the potential dangers of AI, and they call for tighter regulation. So, you know, AI's ambition to become a global leader in AI by 2030 has led to U.S. export restrictions on AI chips and equipment to China. So China's being deliberately suppressed and not being allowed to access the latest AI chips from manufacturers such as NVIDIA. They have not been allowed access to certain types of very sophisticated lithography machines for manufacturing microprocessors, so keeping them always a generation behind as well. I'm sure China resents that a little bit, but you know, when the rubber hits the road with these large geopolitical developments, and people can think of this summit in a way as like a baby version of nuclear summits from decades past, because nuclear power had held a lot of promise for technology, as AI does, but it also, we saw nuclear weapons proliferation. So if you start talking about AI and the use for military and, you know, autonomous drones and targeting and all these things, it starts getting a little scary, right? So they're trying to negotiate or navigate this path between capturing the benefits of AI, but ensuring that we don't end up with the proliferation of, you know, weaponized AI a little much. So great, I guess, good to have China there, but there's maybe another take on why China, some people in China might, or if China were to say to the agree with their academics and research, saying, yes, more regulation. Is there a hidden agenda for wanting more regulation?
Well, my eyebrows were raised when I heard that China was there. I feel like China's like, yeah, we'll sign this non-legally binding agreement. Let us in. Let us in. So, I mean, the effectiveness of future regulatory efforts, it's really going to depend on the level of adherence by all of these countries, by major AI developing entities, and on reconciling the different regulatory approaches that we kind of talked about. So I don't want to be the doomer here. I don't want to be the naysayer all the time, Tristan, but I feel like, how should I say this? Some people's motives are different than other people's motives. That's how I'll wrap that.
Well, so for example, you know, if they said, okay, yeah, let's slow things down, regulate. Like you said, they may decide not to agree, but also if they're already being suppressed from, you know, due to lack of access to certain hardware, maybe they want everyone else to slow down. So it gives them a bit more of a chance to catch up, right?
This is true. Well, I guess we'll see some progress with the next AI safety summits, because there's some other ones coming up, right? There's one hosted by South Korea mid-2024, and then France is going to do one in late 2024.
Maybe Macron will show up to that one.
I was just going to say, you think Macron will come to his own? I don't know. So, I mean, this does indicate that there's going to be ongoing international dialogue and efforts of some kind on AI safety and regulation, which is a little bit promising. Mm-hmm. There, I'm being positive for you, Tristan.
There you go. But of course, the success of these future summits will hinge on continued global cooperation and commitment as everyone holds hands in a circle and sings Kumbaya. And of course, the ability to reconcile differing regulatory approaches amidst geopolitical tensions. So just like the UN, it's going to be totally effective 100% of the time.
Well, I think it would be cool to talk a little bit about Bletchley Park. Just the history for real quick, give some people some stats.
Where this all happened, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So Bletchley Park was once the top secret home of Britain's World War II code breakers. So it housed the men and women who succeeded in breaking what was seemingly impenetrable codes and ciphers, including Nazi Germany's Enigma code. So you may recognize this one name, Tristan. A notable Bletchley Park code breaker included mathematician Alan Turing, who played a key role in cracking the Enigma code and is often considered the father of computer science. So it's kind of a cool little throw, a little nod to Bletchley Park, which I love.
By having it there too. Yeah. One quick little Bletchley Park anecdote. back in the, I guess, early to mid 80s, my mom sent me to speech arts lessons with her teacher that she had when she was my age. So this was probably around, I guess, 10, 11, 12 years old. And we got trained on how to do things like poetry reading, Bible reading, Shakespeare, you know, speech writing, public speaking, like all that stuff, a little bit of mime as well. And my private tutor for that, her name was Audrey Mellers. And a little bit later in the, toward the end of our tenure, I suppose, our collaboration, she was finally able to reveal to me that she actually was working in the division of Bletchley Park as one of these code breakers. So at the time, her name was Audrey Hickey, and she passed away a number of years ago, but she worked in the Newmanry, which was a section of Bletchley Park. And its job was to develop and employ statistical and machine methods in cryptanalysis of the Lorenz cipher. Not sure what that is. Worked very closely with the testry, where a complementary set of operations were performed to complete the decryption of each message. Formerly called the statistical section, it was known as the Newmanry after its founder and head, Max Newman. It was responsible for the various Robinson machines, naturally, and then the 10 Colossus computers, which were instrumental in the code-breaking efforts. And so that was kind of cool. And I found my teacher. There's this, this archived page from Wikipedia hosted on IPFS, the Interplanetary File System. And yeah, so my old speech arts teacher, Audrey Hickey, later Audrey Mellers, was part of that. And I got to see proof that she was part of that team. So that's pretty neat. And she was excited to reveal to me once certain things were declassified back then, because she knew I was really into computers. So that was a neat little moment we had back in the 80s with 12-year-old Tristan.
That's so cool.
Just one little thing from the outputs of this this UK Safety Summit. I think it's well summed up in this cartoon from, or this comic from Caltoons, you can find online, and it's got representations of the UK, Europe, China, and US, and saying, "We declare that AI poses a potentially catastrophic risk to humankind, and I cannot wait to develop it first." So when this goes online, or you can see it in the show notes, you can click through in the show notes and see the comic. It's not entirely wrong, necessarily.
It's a scary funny. I guess is how we would say it.
Okay, so and the other thing we will leave you with is some primers on AI safety. If you want to learn more about the sorts of things that they're all talking about in these in summits like this, we've got some articles over from the last few years, some blog posts and key primers, some research papers that of varying levels of intensity. We'll leave those in the show notes as well for you to wade through all the different kind of issues on AI safety should you want to go down that rabbit hole.
Well, we've done it again, Tristan. Somehow.
Just barely.
Just barely. We
try to keep it tight.
We squeaked by. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of AI Named This Show. Believe it or not, we are still new. It's only episode 12, so we would love your feedback. Email us anytime, feedback@AINamedThisShow.com. You can also find us anywhere you get your podcasts. So be sure to give us a follow, share this episode. Please leave us a review, 5 stars preferred. We're also on all the socials. We are at AI Named This Show. Literally on all of the socials. Thank you so much for joining us.
AI and goodbye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.